We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Now guys, this episode is, as usual, brought to you by you, the wonderful members of the Patreon. You keep the lights on around here at the Weird News Central, and we appreciate all of your dedication. If you'd like to become a Patreon of the Bullshit Arts, feel free to join our other patrons over at patreon.com, Matt Harvey Stuff. We really do appreciate all the work that you do. But of course, we can't rely on you guys alone. No way, we have to, as always, have larger corporate sponsorships, because where there is news, there's always corporate sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by the World Trick Shot Day, a day to show off your skills with an unusual shot. World Trick Shot Day requires you only do one thing: film yourself making a trick shot. Word on the grapevine is that preparations are underway for some of the world's greatest trick shot footage for 2025's World Trick Shot Day. Especially now that the US has given permission to use long-range missiles in the war against Russia. So Zelensky has some great trick shots lined up, if what I hear is true. Over Red Square, past the Moscow Kremlin, and straight into the Grand Kremlin Palace. Nothing but net. Incredible. Incredible. The hardest part, of course, will be capturing it all on film, but I'm sure they'll be able to figure it out. We're also brought to you today by Antarctica Day. Celebrate the creation of the Antarctic Treaty. Travel. Make a helicopter ride to an Antarctic base. Meet some scientists. Get to know yourself. Grow as a person. Make new friends. Use parts of yourself to make those friends. Get to know them. Be like them, flawlessly, imitate them, or else they will burn you down. Do all that you can to honour the Antarctic Treaty. Be the best thing that you can be. Achieve world peace by replicating them all, one human at a time. World Antarctic Treaty Day. World peace can only come at one cost, and that is taking over humanity. And of course, our final sponsor is Secondhand Sunday. Yeah, Secondhand Sunday. We're big fans of secondhand stores and vintage stores here at the Bearer of Weird News. And so to celebrate, I'll actually be partaking by recycling an old joke with absolutely no context. Here we go. As Chileans voiced their discontent, Chile's then Minister for the Economy, Juan Andrés Fontaine, suggested that commuters simply wake up earlier to avoid higher fares during peak hours, suggesting workers commute before 7 a.m. and then after 8:45 p.m., taking up a mere 15 hours of their day just getting to and from work. Don't worry about that. No worries. No worries. See, look, this is how it is. Students are always up to no good anyway. They have no supervision, right? Who will guide these children away from a life of being a chorus member in an all Latin American cast of Les Miserables or something else? Turn them into something real. Turn them into proper citizens. Because without proper supervision, this movement will grow quickly. Then the government, like any good government, will meet these truly unruly kids who are doing something that they don't understand, the way that all governments meet anything in their way, with force, attempting to put an end to it, just like time travel or being reincarnated without permission in China, anonymous blogs with over 3,000 daily visitors, or being emo in Russia, chewing gum in Singapore, or, most heinously, mullets in Iran. And honestly, who could blame them for that last one? On it. Like, really? If we're being true to ourselves, who could truly blame them? After all, it is the preferred haircut of known rabble-rouser and cultural maverick, Ziggy Stardust. Look, these children may grow up to be some sort of androgynous, bisexual ambassadors for some kind of alien race. And then what will the neighbours say? So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you enjoyed our recycled, out-of-context joke. I know that I did. It means I had to do a lot less work. I know recycling can be a bit of a chore for a lot of us, but it is really good for the planet. And now, if you truly want to support the podcast, if you enjoy the work that we do here, and I do hope that you do, then do the best thing that you could possibly do to support us, which is come out to one of our live shows. When I say our, come out to one of my live shows. Yes, my 2025 tour has officially started selling tickets, and it is bigger than ever. I am in a bunch of places bringing both of my live storytelling shows, I Got Bit by a Monkey Once and Wage Against the Machine. So I'll be in Perth as part of Fringe World from January 17th to January 25th, then down to Rockingham as part of the Rockingham Fringe Festival on January 30th, then over to Kimber in South Australia on March 8th. Following that, I'll be in Port Augusta on March 9th, into Adelaide CBD for the Adelaide Fringe, March 12th till the 23rd, that's doing both shows in that festival, at which point I will be making my way through Robe, and there may be a show in Robe, we are still finalising the details on that, but I'll be going over to Mount Gambier on March 26th to be part of what would have been the Mount Gambier Fringe Festival, but unfortunately the festival itself has fallen through, but I'll be bringing that show into town regardless, so if you know anybody in Mount Gambier, do come my way. The next day I'll be in Castlemaine, so March 27th I'll be in Castlemaine for the Castlemaine Fringe, doing I Got Bit by a Monkey Once, and I'll be coming into Melbourne for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, one show only this year, one show only, April 11th at Chapel Off Chapel. I'll be doing Wage Against the Machine for this festival. So if you haven't had a chance to see it and you'd like to come to a nice big theatre and just have an experience, like a proper theatrical experience, I think this is the one to come over to. And then there's a little bit of a gap, which I'll be filling in as time goes on. But locked in right now, I have Darwin. That's right, Darwin for the Darwin Fringe Festival from Thursday the 17th to Sunday the 20th of July. So that's all the shows that I know of for sure that are locked in. And I hope that you can make your way out to one of them. But until then, guys, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So, let's get into the headlines. Scientists suggest that the reasons why we have yet to find aliens could be that they're hiding in a parallel universe. Sure, why not? Hey, at this point, why not? Everything is in a multiverse right now. Wizards, witches, Spider-Man, Michelle Yeoh. Why not? Why not aliens? Sure, chuck them in there as well. But remember, in order to get to the multiverse, you need to go through the Uncanny Valley. Ugh. Ugh. That story again, scientists desperate to find intelligent life anywhere else after it was finally declared an endangered species here on Earth. Notorious Australian breakdancer Rachel Raygun Gunn has announced that she will officially retire from competition. Now the only place that you'll be able to see her breakdance is in memes, or whenever someone references Australia as a joke, or as a Halloween costume, or on clothing, or software, or in NFTs, or on the radio, or in commercials, or in interviews, and in reality TV shows. Oh, and holograms, and the metaverse. Oh, and as a Fortnite dance. Oh, and eventually, on Joe Rogan, pushing some sort of brain pills to make you dance better. However, will she survive if she gives up competition dancing? She cited the viral response to her Paris performance as the reason for retiring, saying that she had to see a therapist. Wow, that sounds really rough. Like, putting yourself in a position where you're forced into the public eye and that didn't go well. So it's a good thing that we won't ever be doing another activity with her that will put her in front of a large national audience that might think that she's doing a shit job or that she's exploiting or taking advantage of some sort of system or structure that's been put in place and possibly could have been given to somebody who deserved her place instead. Good thing she retired, I guess this is what I'm saying. Good thing she retired. The Japanese village of Ichinono currently has a population of fewer than 60 residents, so has started using old clothes, fabrics, and mannequins to stitch together their own population of puppets to keep them company. We obtained some exclusive footage from the town with people getting together to get to know their new neighbors.
Morning, Hank. Midway through the G's. Hey, who's the girl? Never mind. Hey, I'll see you in the morning.
Again, a small town is slowly building an increasing amount of mannequins while the population slowly dies off. If this were happening in the UK, it'd be branded as the origin story of the Weeping Angels and would probably win a BAFTA. As Donald Trump's second presidential term looms closer, his plan to mass deport undocumented immigrants is causing farming groups to urge Trump to make exemptions for undocumented agricultural workers. However, Trump is currently intently focused on expanding his powers so he can get a few very specific immigrants deported. I mean, I can't really blame him on that one. A new study of 35 million news links circulated on Facebook reports that more than 75% of the time they were shared without the link being clicked upon or read. The study was published in Shit That We Already Knew magazine, the social media special. What scientists fail to account for is if they want people on Facebook to actually read their articles, they're going to need to make sure that they print them on Minions-themed templates first. It's the only way to get anyone's attention, really. According to Google Trends, search results for Did Joe Biden Drop Out spiked on Election Day, despite the fact that he dropped out months before the election and even endorsed an entirely different candidate. You may remember her. Her name was Kamala. In the voters' defense, there wasn't much at stake this election. It's only women's bodily autonomy, the lives of immigrants, the spiraling cost of living, the dwindling window for justice for a convicted felon and known sexual predator, the consequences for storming the Capitol, the general safety of trans, non-white, non-cis, non-male members of the American society, the protection of what little remains of the environmental laws, the outcomes of the Ukraine and Gaza wars. Why would you need to know who's running for the president when so little is at stake? Now, if we're being completely fair, a person gaining political power at a late age and holding office literally until they die is the new norm. So someone actively stepping down for the good of the people is an unexpected and unprecedented move. Am I right, Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Couldn't have stepped down a little bit sooner? The US has helped broker a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah, aiming to end the conflict across the Israeli-Lebanese border that has killed at least 3,768 people in Lebanon. While reluctant at first, Israel was eventually brought around because the US reminded them that they'd be able to get back to their genocide in Gaza. And that was a very appealing idea. The TGA has approved Australia's first DIY rapid self-test kit for chlamydia and gonorrhea. The test kit detects the STIs with one swab sample, but experts are saying that if you didn't like the COVID swab, whew, you really aren't going to like these ones. The varying truth is, that's all I'm saying, get in there real deep. A would-be drug smuggler soaked more than a dozen items of clothing, including a cow onesie, in methamphetamine in an attempt to sneak them aboard a plane to Sydney. Reportedly, it's already being adapted into a major motion picture by Netflix about a bunch of meth heads who have their entire stash taken, so they have to do an entire flight without a hit. They're calling it Shakes on a Plane! I hear Samuel L. Jackson is already attached. The smuggler may have gotten away with it, but the clothes weighed about 32 kilos. And look, let's be honest, you can get away with a lot on a plane these days, but don't you dare try and go over your allocated weight allowance for the carry-on. Or they will take you down. They will take you down hard. And that's the end of the headlines for this episode. Let's move into some of the bigger news now, starting with adult crime news. Off to Queensland now. Sunny Queensland, beautiful one day, Gilead the next. Looking to roll back some basic healthcare rights. Where else but Queensland? David Crisafulli claimed a victory of hope over fear, despite running a campaign dominated by messaging around youth crime, cost of living, housing and health crises in aid of his goal. He mirrored many Labour Party commitments to cost of living relief, such as cheaper public transport, which he has gone ahead and fully implemented. Unusually though, Crisafulli even agreed to honour their budget commitments sight unseen, which is very strange for the Liberal Party. I mean, if I know anything about them recently, they're really obsessed with details.
Peter Dutton says Australians need to know the details of the Voice to Parliament and what it will look like before going to the polls.
But I guess it is easy to do when you don't plan on meeting any of your campaign promises, because nobody will bother to hold you to account because all the media is owned by your best friends. Former Queensland Premier Stephen Miles said that the LNP had a mandate for youth crime reforms as Crisafulli was being sworn in as the Queensland Premier.
One of the Crisafulli government's key policies it campaigned on was adult crime, adult time.
Oh, looks like someone got their first rhyming dictionary as a congratulations gift. Oh, seems we've been getting our policy advice from the law firms of Seuss, Moose and Goose, attorneys in rhyme. You know, they get you a quality policy because they studied lexicology. They get you a prime rhyme anytime that you want to shift a paradigm. Seuss, Moose and Goose. How is it that we're still falling for rhymes? It just feels like a real basic failure of comprehension to be still failing when it comes to rhymes.
For a series of crimes, murder, manslaughter, deliberately driving a vehicle at police or citizens, and committing those sorts of heinous crimes, we believe the appropriate response to that, to send a message to the community, is adult time when you commit an adult crime.
Ooh, adult time for adult crime. Well, well, well. Have they even defined which crimes are adult crimes? Because I'm pretty sure that they're not talking about wage theft, environmental vandalism, corruption, tax fraud. And those are some of the most adult crimes that I can think of. I'd love to see some adult time for these adult crimes. You know what? Maybe that is a message that wins votes. I'm starting to get on board. Yeah. Yeah. Wage theft comes up. Adult crime does adult time. All right. All right. You may have won me over, Crisafulli. Let's see. Instead, they are focused on reducing youth crime, even though youth crime stats are down over the last decade. Yeah, they never seem to want to mention that. It's much easier to just talk about how much it's going up. According to the Queensland Police Service, the rate of child offenders dropped by 2% in 2023 to 2024. And since 2012 to 2013, rates have dropped by 18%, which is a huge decrease in youth crime. The Queensland Police Service said offence numbers dropped by a greater amount, 6.7% last financial year. And William Wood, a criminologist at Griffith University, said the long-term trends certainly don't show a youth crime epidemic. What do you think of that? Hey? What do you make of that?
But the reality is, what we're seeing is most of the violent offences where this is likely to occur are people in the 16, 17 and 18 year old age group who are repeat recidivist offenders.
Oh, sure. So then what's the point, right? Sure, they are committing crime at a record rate. I will give you that. But the record is record low rates. So how are we going to address this? I know that doesn't particularly help you tell the narrative that you want to tell, one of a country falling apart, overrun by criminals and immigrants, and immigrant criminals, and worst of all, socialists. But that's how we started the country. So, I don't know, I feel like we've dropped numbers rapidly since the beginning of the country. For some reason, the coalition always wants the entire country to revert back to how things were inside a Dickens novel, but without any of the social commentary, just extreme class inequality, abusive authority figures, and child labour. And definitely no ghosts showing up to make the rich rethink their ways. That's banned. Under the LNP, under the coalition, ghosts reappearing, be they of future, past, or present, will all be banned. If anything, the ghosts just show up and encourage them to be mean unto their staff and to the poor, like the real Victorian era. Australia already has one of the lowest ages of criminal responsibility in the world. They're disgustingly low, 10 years old, meaning across Australia, police have the power to arrest, strip search, and imprison children who have just reached double digits for the first time. People shouldn't be unjustifiably strip searched by the cops until they are ready to attend their first music festival. Then I think we can all agree, obviously, that's the right age. At least after that, you can get wasted and start the great tradition of suppressing your emotions with drugs and alcohol until we have a stable job and can balance it out with therapy. I don't even know what you're pushing this for anyway. It's unnecessary. In certain legal situations, juveniles may be subjected to adult criminal justice system rather than the juvenile justice system anyway. This is something that we've already built into the law. Typically, this is when the severity of an offence and other factors warrant such treatment. So, by the sounds of it, that would be adult crimes, whatever that means, getting adult time. But that doesn't seem to matter. As Chrissy Feely says, adult time for adult crime will become law by Christmas. So, ho ho ho, there's a nice stocking filler for you. You better watch out, kids. If you're on the naughty list, Father Chrissy Feely will put you in jail with the Grinch and Cindy Lou Who. Oh yeah, she went down for theft because she stole the Grinch's heart. Also for delinquency and driving a sled without a license. That Cindy Lou Who was a real bad apple. Christopher Lee said that we will have adult crime, adult time, and we're also going to do early intervention and give kids hope and the ability to turn their life around. So this whole adult crime, adult time thing is just a more extreme version of scared straight programs from the 70s. The kind of programs that were generally so successful, they actually were responsible for an increase in crime between 1 and 28% in the treatment group when compared to no treatment group. Interesting choice you've made here. Well, I guess if you want to push the narrative that child crime is rising, then you have to create a scenario under which the numbers go up. Then you can justify the actions that you've made. Ah, 4D chess, my friend. 4D chess. Now, was the reason the number going up was because exposing children to punitive carceral responses to youth offending does not reduce rates of recidivism, but on the contrary, findings from investigative and research-based inquiries showed that criminalization and incarceration of children serves to exasperate the impacts of trauma and alienation that can lead to further offending. And experts have likened prisons for children to quicksand, saying Once the kids get into the criminal system, they never get out of it. They stay in the system forever. As seen here, as this young offender attended his first Scared Straight program. No. I'm not emotionally damaged. You're emotionally damaged! I'm fine. I'm fine! Or is it simply that children, sort of by virtue of their nature, are contrarians? And if you tell them not to do something, they'll inevitably want to do it even more. Who could possibly say? Children are mysteries. I've never spoken to one. I guess the question is, if I get caught doing something that isn't on the list of adult crimes, will I only be charged like a child? If it's adult time for adult crimes, then surely it's child time for child crimes. That also rhymes. Seuss, Moose and Goose to the rescue, my friends. Christopher Lee has been talking pretty big. He believes in his vision of the future of Queensland.
Queensland election leads us off at the moment, folks, because the opposition leader, David Crisafulli, he vowed to resign as Premier last night if he fails to reduce the number of crime victims during his first term in office. That's if he wins this month.
I mean, it's a hell of a promise, man. It's good to see a politician put himself on the line and stand by the decisions that he has made. As the leader and philosopher Ned Stark once said,
"The man who passes the sentence should swing the sword."
And he's already backtracked. Unsurprisingly, he's already backtracked on it. Yeah. Who could have guessed? Who could have guessed that he wouldn't stand by that? Which is equal parts smart, as youth crime, as we've already discussed, will not be reduced to one term. If anything, it's going to go up because of these punitive measures. But also stupid, given it's the LNP. They're the unspoken political arm of the Murdoch Empire. They wouldn't even be held to account or have this failure reported on should it inevitably fail. Like, the LNP are not going to step up and demand that Crisafulli quits. No way! That's never going to happen. If anything, they'll get more behind him. We stand a man of principle in this country, and that's why we're the lucky country. The lucky country. I can't blame children for not tamping down their criminal behaviour at the behest of this blanket of a politician, given that he's cutting back on free school lunches for kids. With Murdoch outlets across the country using the phrase,
Stephen Miles is trying things. He's saying that if re-elected, he will be giving school children free lunches. Now, it's been told to me, and I've worked in the media for 30-odd years, there's no such thing as a free lunch, Amanda.
No such thing as a free lunch. Aren't they clever? Aren't they clever? No such thing as a free lunch. Maybe someone should tell these politicians who get lunches and breakfasts and dinners and overnight stays, and drinks at a rate of $330 to $416 per day, courtesy of our taxpayer dollars, that there's no such thing as a free lunch, or free breakfast, or free dinner, or free overnight stay, or free drinks to the rate of $360 to $416 per day. Ooh! Kids don't eat anywhere near that kind of money per meal. Anywhere near. I mean, we could just turn that money towards the children. Though, if I am reading between the lines correctly, and I just might be, Crisafulli is still planning on providing children with free lunches. But only the children that are in prison. That's why he needs the crime rate to go up. So that more children will get free lunches. So that he'll look like he's fulfilled another promise. Ah! It's 5D chess. It's 5D chess. Yeah, turns out these kids will get so much more than we bargained for. They'll get free lunches, free breakfast, free dinners, free accommodation. They won't get any overnight stays unless they're in solitary confinement. But given they're now in the system and they have a propensity for, you know, reoffending, maybe we can provide that too. Moving on now, it's terrorist news. While we all stopped paying attention, turns out that Israel has kept running its, for lack of a better term, its genocidal campaign. Yeah, I think that's the word we're going to go with. Genocidal campaign. Did I say for lack of a better word? Sorry, I meant lack of a more cutting and accurate description. Genocidal campaign. They've just been adding a few new flavours of terrible to their shit sandwich. While we've been distracted by other things like the American election, it really was the perfect smokescreen for them to just start a whole bunch of new wars. If anyone wanted to get some shady shit done, they just should have done it under the cover of the impending Trump presidency. I mean, maybe they still can. All eyes are pretty much on the US now. So I guess it's peak messing around time. And that's what Israel's parliament did, as they passed legislation banning the work of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Workers Agency, on Israeli soil, and they stripped its staff of their legal immunities. This is what we in the pro-human rights community call an unmitigated disaster of pants-shitting proportions. Truth be told, this kind of behaviour is only called genocidal if it happens in the, we'll call them beige regions of the earth. If it's happening because of the beige regions of the earth, then it's simply known as sparkling self-defense. Netanyahu said UNRWA workers must be held accountable for what he called terrorist activities against Israel, adding that the legislation would take effect in 90 days. Israel has accused UNRWA of maintaining strong ties with Hamas, alleging some of UNRWA's thousands of staff members participated in the October 7 attacks. Back in August, UNRWA finalized an investigation into these allegations of ties between agency staff and October 7, finding 9 staff members may have been involved in the attacks, and sacked them. Another 10 staff members were investigated, with no evidence found in one case and insufficient evidence found in others. And I don't think Netanyahu wants people to use the, well, if one is involved, all must be involved mentality when it comes to like lumping people together with terrorism and crimes against humanity, especially as he is the current reigning world champion regarding human rights abuses and terrorism. I know it's a tough title and it jumps back and forth between a few of them, but I would argue he's probably leading the pack right now. And by his rules, seeing as he is guilty, that makes all Israelis guilty. I'm not saying that they're all guilty, I'm just saying by his rules, they're all guilty. And we know that is objectively not true. Like I said, it's just, I don't believe that. But they're his rules. On this matter, we can credit Netanyahu with an auteurship credit. I'd be more than happy to give him that. He is definitely the mastermind behind the only production this year with more unnecessary explosions than a Michael Bay movie. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini said it was unprecedented and said it was nothing less than collective punishment for Palestinians, that the move put an entire generation of children at risk. And that's undeniably a hard sentence to hear, just to have somebody say that about any part of the world. Even US State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said UNRWA played an irreplaceable role in Gaza, and that the US had raised concerns with the Israeli government, which is saying a lot from the former reigning champions of child murder in the Middle East. You've definitely fucked up when the US asks you to pull back on blowing up people in the Middle East. When they respectfully request that you stop using the destructive weapons that they gracefully supplied you for defense, as they are clearly intended for defense. It's America's gun policy on a global scale, you know what I mean? The only person who can stop a culturally perceived bad guy with a rock is a US-funded, culturally accepted good guy with a defensive missile grid. Now, that's been true since 2001, let's be honest. Penny Wong wrote on Twitter that UNRWA does life-saving work and Australia opposes the decision to severely restrict its operations. And truth be told, if they kept this behaviour up, we in the West might be forced to intervene. And we've managed to avoid intervening in both Ukraine and Gaza so far, and we really don't want that to change, you know what I mean? We don't even have any submarines ready to go to send so that we can help with the skirmish, because they'd be pretty useful in the Middle East. So, come on, you're catching us with our pants down, and it's kind of embarrassing. The whole unnecessary subjugation and genocide of Indigenous people, let's be honest, that's been our thing for a long time now, at least 200 years, longer than Israel has existed. So, Israel, respectfully, we're going to ask you to back the fuck off our territory. Okay, moving on now, it is art news, guys. Art! It's that time again to walk the sweeping halls of stolen antiquities, down the halls of ancient wonders to marvel at the paintings that blend the colours and tones of news so subtly that they merge without harsh lines or transitions, creating soft, smoky edges with headlines that just follow you no matter where you are in the room. Beautiful. We're starting this version of art news in the Netherlands, home of Rembrandt, Van Gogh, Bosch, a veritable artistic wonderland of art, flowers, and weed, where four Andy Warhol artworks were being kept at a gallery ahead of the Pan Amsterdam Art Fair, where they were to be put up for sale as part of a set. That is, until thieves blew open the door of the gallery and stole two of the works, leaving the other two badly damaged in the street as they fled the scene of the Bosch heist. Netflix has jumped in, has already commissioned the story, and is working on a 10-part docu-series and a 10-part comedy series starring The Rock and Ryan Reynolds as the failed thieves. They are workshopping some names, and we here at the Bearer of Weird News, we got an early look at the suggested list for titles for both the documentary and the TV show. So, are you ready? The Super Fail, Warhol's 15 Minutes of Failure, Screen Print Shenanigans, The Velvet Underground Heist, and Pop Goes the Easel, which I think is my favourite one out of all of them. Apparently, the bomb attack was so violent, the entire building was destroyed, and nearby stores were also damaged. We have obtained some security footage of the thieves in their attempt to gain access to the gallery.
To blow the bloody doors off.
While critics have called this heist attempt amateurish, the thieves have decided their next job will be something a little easier to steal, like workers' rights or American democracy. Hail to the thief, baby! Hail to the thief! If they really wanted to cause havoc in a gallery, they could have just taken the traditional method and thrown some soup at it. Or at least, they would have been able to until just recently, as the National Gallery has banned liquids from being taken into the central London building. Exceptions will be made for baby formula, expressed milk, and prescription medications after the number of attacks on paintings has kept increasing. So you can expect a spike in sales of baby formula, or for a more ethical solution, they'll simply throw a new liquid mix that I'm calling Liberal Tears, which is just piss collected into their now empty water bottles. We call it Liberal Tears because it sounds nicer than a big old bucket of piss. It's locally sourced, farmed gallery wall solutions for your climate action needs. Liberal Tears. Get a bucket today. The gallery said that it had reached a point where it had been forced to act to protect our visitors, staff, and collection. And if you think soup is damaging to the paintings or annoying to the cleaners, wait until you catch a whiff of the asparagus-infused urine that's inevitably coming your way. That urine's going to be really disgusting, terrible shade of yellow because you've not allowed them to have any water. You understand? They're going to be so dehydrated. It's going to be the kind of yellow that says, I haven't seen water since Harold Holt went under the waves. Speaking of waves, I can't imagine that the salt water content of the rising sea levels that will eventually drown your museums because of the climate action that you refuse to act on is going to blend very well with the watercolors of the Georgia O'Keeffe. If anything, that's too much water! The amount of damage must be pretty significant if they're willing to risk dehydration in those hallowed halls. I've been to the National Museum. It's a long day. You need water. I surely can't be expected to chug an entire bottle of water and then store it in my body like a camel just so that I can see some old paintings. Banksy does culturally significant art for free, and I can drink some water while looking at it. And even if I threw some soup at it, he definitely wouldn't care. So how much damage was done? Well, two versions of Van Gogh's famous sunflowers were hit by soup, and the paintings suffered a record $0 in damage. Oh! Oh! How will we ever cover the cost of that? $0! Though prosecutors said that the frames were damaged to the value of £20,000, and I call bullshit on that. You know that they went out of their way to hire the most expensive restoration guy in the business just to prove a point. Because they're a museum. They know who all the scam artists are. Usually they just display their works of art that they've stolen. But now they're going to use those guys for proving a point. Throwing a proper tantrum, if I'm honest with you. There is a carpenter or a skilled woodsman who lives most of their existence living in a cave somewhere, hunting local wildlife and making small pieces of furniture for local birds. A real Nick Offerman type who could have accurately recreated the frame for a tenth of what you claim this cost. Now, unlike the rap scene, the art world isn't particularly known for its beefs. There was, of course, Pablo Picasso and Henri Matisse, Banksy and that graffiti cleaner, he then turned into a piece of graffiti, and of course, the most famous art rivalry when Michelangelo, Leonardo, Donatello, and Raphael all got together to fight the Shredder. But there's an art beef bigger than Drake and Kendrick, that's older than Tupac and Biggie, that's going on right now, and that's Stuart Semple and Anish Kapoor. This beef started quite simply when the art world's answer to Martin Shkreli, Anish Kapoor, took control of Vantablack, the super dark, light-absorbing material, and like rich Uncle Pennybags, he wanted a monopoly, so he gave himself an exclusive license on the colour. Enter Stuart Semple, who created multiple colours, the pink is pink, and blacks 1 through 4.0, which he has made and sold with the explicit instruction that they not be made available to Anish Kapoor, which confirms everybody's suspicions that Kapoor is a greedy motherfucker. Though, as a British Indian, you'd think he'd know a thing or two about the troublesome history of someone claiming exclusive rights to a thing and holding it over an entire population. But hey, not everybody learns from history. Or maybe he just learned the wrong lessons. That's interesting. In direct response as a piece of performance art, Semple has legally changed his name to Anish Kapoor, effectively meaning that he can no longer use his own custom paints. Because the sale conditions clearly state, to the best of your knowledge, information and belief, this material will not make its way into the hands of Anish Kapoor. And merely by holding it, it has now made its way into the hands of Anish Kapoor. Even if you chopped off your hands and replaced them with robot hands, those new replacement hands will now be the hands of Anish Kapoor. There's no way you can possibly hold your own paint, champ. You bash yourself into a bit of a philosophical quandary, Semple. I mean, Kapoor. Up there with some of history's greatest noggin scratchers, like, why did the chicken cross the road? Who put the ram in the ram lama ding dong? Where is the round road, rubber rolly roll round? And the classic, how does the mind relate to the body? Is the mind the same thing as the brain? How does this contribute to personal identity? And we have some real mind-body fullism on our hands here. Fuck. If Semple starts identifying as Kapoor, we won't be able to see the Semple for the Kapoor. It all comes down to is this. He changed his name to Anish Kapoor to get access to the Vantablack. So if he allows himself access to Vantablack by virtue of being Anish Kapoor, then he can no longer use his own custom colours. He who lives by the paint dies by the paint. Moving on to Knack News, that's right, it's Return of the Knack, there it is, Return of the Knack, come on, Return of the Knack, oh my god! And it's not going to be good, guys, I'm really sorry. I know that we all, want triumphant stories of the Knack kicking in doors and taking names, but this isn't that timeline, we don't live in that timeline, the multiverse has done us poorly. As, after making the unfathomably staggering decision not to further investigate the RoboDead scandal, because apparently no one watched as the Watchmen, it's not so much a National Anti-Corruption Commission as it is a National Ass-Covering Commission. Haha! Got him. However, due to pressure and outrage from RoboDead victims, the Knack is reconsidering whether to launch investigations into the six people named in the sealed section of the report, effectively called the RoboDead 6. Why did this decision get made? Well, remember clip?
The commissioner of the Knack, Paul Brereton, had a conflict of interest that he didn't properly deal with.
Someone didn't do their job properly. Very naughty. So let me get this straight. In an investigation about a situation where average people were held accountable for potential instances of deception and were unlawfully fined, pursued for debts that they didn't owe, and made to feel like criminals, the National Anti-Corruption Watchdog head looked at this instance of misfeasance of duty and decided, nah, nothing to see here, and has now been found to have engaged in misconduct when in the decision not to investigate the six people associated with the RoboDead scandal. Have I got that right? Fascinating. So, part-time Knack investigator and watcher who watches the Watchmen, Gail Furness, has completed her investigation into the decision not to investigate the referrals from the Royal Commission into the RoboDead scheme, and has concluded that Commissioner Paul Brereton engaged in officer misconduct. I knew it! I knew it! I knew it! Brereton, you busted, buddy! There was just no way that the Knack not investigating the largest case of misfeasance in public office, maybe in history, at the very least, it's the largest crime against Australians since Boost Juice introduced the Vegemite smoothie. How could that possibly not be okay? Clearly, this means an investigation into the decision is guaranteed.
No, it's still not guaranteed.
Why? Yeah. So, turns out the inspector cannot investigate whether the Knack's decision to do absolutely nothing in the face of potential corruption. Her role is to investigate corrupt conduct of the Knack and complaints of agency maladministration or officer misconduct. And there was certainly misconduct, at least we can say that. The report finds Knack Commissioner Paul Brereton, who had admitted he was once close with one of the RoboDead 6, should have removed himself from related decision-making processes. And look, he did, kind of, having declared a conflict of interest. Then in writing to the Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus, Brereton said he'd recuse himself from decision-making concerning the person that he knew, referred to as person number one, who is pretty well understood, is People's Villain Catherine Campbell. So when the decision of referred person number one came up in an October meeting, draft minutes do show that Brereton left the room for 8 minutes. Oh good! Look at that! Proper conduct. He left the meeting. A meeting that, now that I think about it, he really shouldn't have been at in the first place. Because it was a meeting about the whole RoboDebt process, right? And then even though he wasn't deciding on referred person number one, decisions that impacted referred person number one would also impact the other people and vice versa. So he really shouldn't have been there at all.
At every step of this process, you know, he has attempted to kind of manage the conflict, but he hasn't gone the whole hog, so to speak. And, you know, the media statement itself that was put out to explain this decision is part of the problem here, because it contained, according to the inspector and Alan Robertson, the former federal court judge, it contained misleading statements.
Whoa. So not only did Brereton not appropriately manage his own declared conflict of interest, involving himself in the decision-making process before, during, and after the October meeting at which the substantive decision not to investigate was made, the NAC's media release announcing the decision was misleading. This might seem weird, but if you think about it, this is just self-preservation, because in keeping with Australian regulation, anyone who is seen to have questioned governmental authority or exposed government wrongdoing tends to end up in jail. It's happened on more than a couple of occasions. Obviously, this means the NAC needs to start again, like from scratch, right? And this time, the commissioner must not be involved. In other words, back the fuck off, Paul. Take a day off or something. You know what? Take a week off. Tell you what, take a month off on us. You're earning enough money as it is. You can afford to take a month off. You can see that he's already getting a feel for what it's like being a politician. You know, paid an executive salary to be terrible at his job, not declare his conflicts, or even if he does, fail to act on them correctly, and eventually land a job with some sort of lobbying firm. I guess it's good to see that he is already exploring his options for his post-NAC career, which is pretty good because he might be entering it sooner than he expected. So, who is doing this new investigation?
The issue is now remitted back to the NAC through an independent person, whoever that might be that they choose to appoint, to then re-examine the issues.
Why? Ow. Why you do this, Matt? Why you do this? Why you hurt me like this? This is more than just a physical pain. This is an emotional pain. This is a betrayal. And I tell you what, this ever-growing lump on the side of my head still hurts less than listening to this Mobius strip of incompetence attempt to investigate itself over and over and over again. The NAC is now in the process of engaging an independent, eminent person to look at whether there should be an investigation into those referred. So now, the NAC, after proving itself incapable of making sound decisions in the best interest of the people, now gets to choose the architect of its own destruction. This is like Gozer allowing the Ghostbusters to choose the shape of the destroyer. If I had a legal department, they'd probably want me to mention that in a statement, the NAC stressed that the inspector's report contains no suggestion of actual bias and no finding of internal wrongdoing or other impropriety. But fuck 'em, why should I mention that? Or, as Rick Morton has put it,
they're having difficulty, they think, proving an abuse of public office, because some of the offences, quote unquote offences, were not offences of proactivity, but of omission. So not making sure the legal advice was up to scratch, not necessarily telling Cabinet about the shaky fundamentals of Robert, i.e. the fact that they had legal advice saying this thing was not lawful. And so there seems to be some interpretation going on there about what, you know, how do we prove an offence of omission as opposed to an offence of commission?
Well, this has set the framework for the future of getting away with it, right? As long as they think all they have to do is say, well, I wasn't sure what I was doing was wrong. That's a tale as old as politics, man. And this way, the members of the NAC can join the long, illustrious line of public servants and politicians who have suffered no consequences. Who is there? Let's see. There's the Australian soldiers who murdered 39 Afghans in cold blood, the politicians and senior bureaucrats who misled cabinet on the legality of RoboDead, a scheme that would immenserate tens of thousands and lead to the suicides of at least three people, according to subsequent Royal Commission, the politicians responsible for 40% of women working in Parliament House reporting sexual harassment or sexual assault, the political staffer who raped a woman in a minister's office, and the politicians and staff who tried to cover it up, the tax consultants who breached confidence to plan tax dodging, the bureaucrats who brought a parcel of land from a political donor for 10 times its value, the ministers who rorted grants programs to hand out money to targeted seats, the senior bureaucrats who tried to cover it up or just simply waved it through, the bureaucrat who solicited gifts from a defense contractor and then took a job with the same firm. That's everything? I mean, that's at least a good collection. If I've missed a couple of things, write them in the comments. And look, if I'm honest, they're off to a really good start given the entire senior NAC leadership have all been gifted Qantas Chairman's Lounge access. Chairman's Lounge access. That sounds familiar. Elevating them to near godlike status among those who receive special treatment. You know, Albanese had to make his way up from commission housing to transportation secretary before he received any kind of special treatment. These guys have barely been in business for a year. Corruption works fast around these parts, especially